And we're here on KURU 89.1 FM, online at gmcr.org, sitting on the corner of 6th and Bullard here in downtown Silver City. And, well, we got a guest with us today. Our guest this afternoon is Jeffrey Ernsthoff, who will be performing as part of the President's Distinguished Speaker Series, titled Exactly 63 Minutes with an Unstable American Musician at WNMU's Light Hall Theater tonight at 7 p.m. You can find more information at wnmu.edu/culture, including ticketing information. Exactly 63 Minutes with a Slightly Unstable American Musician is a jazz comedy cabaret combining hilarious, wacky, and poignant true anecdotes from childhood music lessons to the Olympic ceremonies to Super Bowl halftime shows to White House events and more, all supported by outstanding performances on 8 musical instruments with original songs and audience participation. More recently, after completing a 10-year stint as special events creative director for the Radio City Music Hall Productions in New York City, he founded Ernsthoff Creative Services in 2004, online at ernsthoffcreative.com, that's E-R-N-S-T-O-F-F creative.com, here in graduate degrees, a BA in music and a BA or BS in education, excuse me, at the University of Wisconsin, a master's degree in arts programming at Harvard University, and is the recipient of National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship in Music, Musical Theater, and the Chairman's Task Force on Arts Education. He's also a member of the Writers Guild of America, ASCAP, and Phi Delta Kappa, that's the National Educator Society. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And just let me just say for your listeners, we're not actually on the corner. We're inside the studio, but I can see people outside, and they're apparently telling me my car is illegally parked, but we'll move on.
We'll have to make our way through that. So we're sitting here amongst a whole bunch of metal instruments. Can you tell me and the listeners more about what we've got going on here?
Well, the program includes performances on several instruments, most of which are in the woodwind family. So we've got a flute, an alto flute, and a bass flute. Of course, those are in descending order of length. And I brought in a curved soprano saxophone. And the reason I say that it's curved is that most folks, when they think of the soprano saxophone, think of Kenny G or John Coltrane or so on. And that instrument is, in fact, straight. The curved soprano looks like an alto or tenor. It's got, you know, curved and got a bell. The reason that it's come into more prominent use in the last 15 or 20 years is that making an instrument that has curves in it play in tune is difficult from an engineering point of view. So curved soprano saxophones, which have a mellower sound, were problematic because they were just so difficult to play in tune. But in the last 15 or 20 years, the technical capabilities of the instrument have been tremendously enhanced, and I just like it because it's cozier.
Nice. It is quite the array here, and well, if you're out tonight, you'll definitely be able to see it. So before we hop into everything, everyone kind of has their own interesting connection here to Silver City, and I wanted you to share yours with us.
Okay, well, I drove down from Albuquerque today looking for a gas station. That was, you know, a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
I just made it. But some years ago, the folks up at the Santa Fe Institute, in Santa Fe, were looking for opportunities to enhance their area of expertise, which is mathematics and physics and so on, with some arts content that related to what they are always studying and so on. And there was a festival of sci-fi films as part of a summer series. I can't remember the whole thing, but they asked me to give a kind of lecture demonstration on sci-fi, the film scores, yeah, to sci-fi films. So I did it at a theater up there called the Lensic, and it was very nice. And then through some people there, I met the president of your school here, Joe Shepard, and he very nicely invited me to come down and fly out from D.C. and make a little presentation. So here I am. It's great to be back in New Mexico, by the way, because believe me, in Washington, D.C., you cannot drive at 95 miles an hour and get away with it.
Yeah,
even if it's in spurts, let me say that in case there is law enforcement listening.
Well, they weren't there at the time, huh? So getting back to this evening's performance, can you tell us a little bit more about what people should expect at 63 Minutes with an Unstable American Musician?
Well, I think that the title And it's exactly 63 minutes, which of course it isn't, but an unstable American musician. The whole point of the program really is that that title, unstable American musician, is redundant. Believe me, if you're a professional American musician and you're working on shows across the country as big as the Olympics or as small as a charity benefit for a local animal shelter, you're going to wind up unstable.
Mm-hmm.
So what people will encounter is some music played, hopefully, very well, and three wonderful local musicians are going to help me, going to back me up as a trio. But the show itself is basically a collection of funny anecdotes, starting in my own experience, starting back in junior high school, going all the way up through the five Super Bowl halftimes, and I don't know, program projects for Special Olympics and Fortune magazine and conferences and the Super Bowl halftimes and World Cup soccer and a whole bunch of others.
Yeah, and well, I guess that kind of leads us here into our next part of this interview. Yesterday we were discussing some of the anecdotes that you have there, and you had mentioned the Super Bowl, and we had some stories to share about the 1993 Super Bowl, which you had some heavy involvement in.
That was the Michael Jackson. I was involved with five, but I think you're talking about the one with Michael Jackson and Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Yes.
Kind of a funny story. When you're the creative director, or in that this case, co-creative director for that particular show of the Super Bowl halftime, you know, you rehearse off-site for weeks and so on, and Michael Jackson was the headliner for the halftime.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal. Yeah. Right? And obviously, by the way, this was Bree Scandal. As a creative director, you want to make sure that everything's properly loaded in before it actually gets onto the field. It's stored back in tunnels and all that kind of stuff. And there's a whole team of specialists who know how to get a set on and off the field in 10, 12 minutes, whatever. But Garth Brooks was doing, Garth Brooks was doing the pre-show, the pre-game show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing to do with that. But when I went down to the tunnel to just check on everything, to check on everything, there's Garth Brooks,
yeah,
maybe, I don't know, 40 yards away from me, outside the subterranean dressing room, and he's on the phone, and he's screaming, absolutely screaming on the phone, and I'm just trying to figure out, make sure all my stuff is there. It's pretty hard to not notice, yeah, right? Well, next thing I know, he gets in a limo and takes off.
Yeah.
And the show's not that far away. I mean, we're talking about, you know, maybe half an hour away or something. This is pregame, not the halftime.
That's not good.
So I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I went back up to show control in the press box for, yeah, the halftime show. And there's this mad scramble going on. And when you do a show like that, you, the television directors and so on, you know where all the celebrities are seated.
Right.
Right. So they're identifying these people because Garth Brooks has walked out. He's supposed to sing the national anthem. So they're trying to find a sub to do the national anthem. Well, why is Garth Brooks so angry? Because who was it that year? I think it was ABC, but it might have been NBC. Because it changes every,
right,
year who carries it, right? So Garth Brooks had been promised that there would be several pre-promotes for his new album.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they didn't air.
Oh.
So he was really angry, and he's walking out. So when I get back to the press box, the whole team, NFL and radio station, we're looking for people in the stands, meaning celebrities, right, who might sing the national anthem,
yeah,
for us. So and I don't want to say the names of the people who said that they wouldn't do it,
right,
but responses from household names or, what are you, crazy? And believe me, I'm cleaning that up.
It's okay. A big responsibility. Yeah.
Well, and you know, with no rehearsal, and the,
yeah,
Star Spangled Banner is not easy to sing,
mm,
and they would have to sing it a cappella. The whole big cast thing, that would have all been wiped away.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So John Bon Jovi says, okay, I'll do it. Which, I mean, the guts, again, euphemistically speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guts to do that is pretty incredible.
Right.
So word gets back to Garth Brooks in his limo that we've got somebody, okay? Not to worry. It's all okay. Well, guess,
yeah,
what? The limo turns around, Garth Brooks comes back and does the show. But it was pretty tense there for a while, and some of the reactions from the vocalists in the crowd who said no. Some of those reactions were quite, let's just say, colorful.
Yeah. Well, now you know how to get Garth Brooks to do something for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you also mentioned Michael Jackson performing there. You mentioned just his presence, especially around that era, the height of his career. Or
well, this was the thing with Michael Jackson. It was very interesting because at that particular point, this was probably, I'm going to guess, Super Bowl 27 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Jackson's career at that point, although he was touring the world and selling out all over the place, Michael Jackson's career was in a little bit of a dip.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is that in the previous year Super Bowl, Fox Network, yeah. who were not broadcasting the game, they counter-programmed the halftime show. So Fox said, okay, during halftime, turn over to Fox, watch this special edition of a hit show called In Living Color.
Okay.
And then go back to the game.
Mm-hmm.
So NBC was freaked out because that means advertising dollars. I mean,
yeah.
millions of dollars at stake here. Mm-hmm. So NBC wanted a big star, and Michael Jackson's career needed a boost. And this was the first time that a really, really major superstar did the Super Bowl halftime. It was at the Rose Bowl in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having our first meeting with him, and the producer was a guy named Don Mischer, who had done the Motown 25 show. I mention that only because that's where Michael debuted the moonwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we had a meeting in this major Hollywood agent's office, and Michael was going to come in and talk and listen to what we had in mind and so on. And just a minute or so before he walks in, someone from the office came in and said, okay, Michael will be in a minute. Don't stare. How do you not stare? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Give me a break. It was ludicrous. Anyway, he walked into the room and it was a cold day in L.A. He was carrying a jacket. And he walked across the room, maybe I'm guessing 15 feet to put the jacket down, and then went and sat down. It was as though he never touched the ground. His ethereal presence was so intense. I just felt, and I've said this many, many times, like I could put my hand right through him. The guy floated.
Wow.
He didn't walk. It was astonishing. And to watch him just do his behind-the-scenes dance warm-ups were pretty incredible,
right.
too. But I'll just never forget the lightness of his being. Incredible.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And it was Super Bowl 27. You had it right on the mark there. Awesome. So we...
Oh, and it was... Because of his fame, mm-hmm. right, and NBC's pre-promoting and so on, it broke all the... You know, at the time, it was the largest audience that ever watched the Super Bowl halftime.
Yeah, and that was the performance where you just kind of came on stage and just stood there for about a minute, right?
Yeah, and the producer screaming in the headset, you know. One of the interesting things was that we had done already a couple of Super Bowl halftimes, and... Normally, you kind of put all these kids or people on the field. They do these special effects with lights or cards or all that kind of stuff. But Michael insisted that he be surrounded by 500 fans who were just like a giant mosh pit.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely right. It gave a tremendous amount of excitement to mm-hmm. the program. And we had all kinds of pageantry stuff going on outside. But he knew best. He really knew what he was doing. And so it was a very interesting project.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in here to KURU, we're talking with Jeffrey Ernsthoff. He'll be performing tonight as part of the President's Distinguished Speaker Series, titled Exactly 63 Minutes with an slightly unstable, or not slightly.
Not slightly, completely,
completely unstable American musician. That's going to be at Western's Light Hall Theater this evening at 7 p.m. You can find ticketing information at wnmu.edu/culture. We previously mentioned these crazy piles of metal laying around the table here, and I was wondering if maybe you could show us what they do.
Sure. These are all played in the show for some of its jazz, some of its pop, some of its pure jokes, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a whole thing in the show about the fact that I think it's cheating, you know, when you get the name of the piece before it's performed.
Yeah.
I say, okay, after Claude Debussy's famous Afternoon of a Faun. Well, you're expecting something pastoral,
mm-hmm.
right? It already sets you up. I like to give the title afterwards and see if people agree. So, for example, here we go. Damn. Oh, damn. Oh, what a jerk I am at it. That's called What If Mozart Had Tourette's. So you see, that kind of stuff's in there. But anyway, here's a regular flute. Hope I don't blast you out here.
Oh.
Then we go to the longer and lower alto flute, which you probably will recognize. Okay, kind of a much more mellow sound.
Yeah.
Doesn't carry quite so well. And then we have a thing that is probably, let's see, it's probably about, I would say, 7 feet long. And it's the bass flute, which is twice the length of the regular flute, although I just tell people it's the tailpipe from a 64 Buick LeSabre. And it's often used in film scores for spooky effects, for example. So all these instruments get played in most cases, with the trio behind me.
That's cool.
And then we have a saxophone here, which we'll try a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll dig back into that here. Those are awesome. So going back to...
They're all for sale, by the way, so...
All right. Well, you know where you can catch those tonight. So another story from the 1984 Los Angeles Summer Olympics. I'd love for you to tell about your involvement with that and the Rhapsody in Blue performance and the kind of heartfelt story that goes along with it.
Yeah, it's one of the warmest, most gratifying stories of all these shows that I've been fortunate to do. Yeah, for the Los Angeles Olympic opening ceremonies in 1984 at the Coliseum, there was this Music of America segment.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the elements within that segment was a tribute to Gershwin. Now remember, this is Music of America, right? So
yeah.
Rhapsody in Blue. And at the if you're ever watching a football game at the Coliseum, you'll note at the peristyle end, which is where the cauldron is and so on. Well, that's got 14 arches, okay? And guess what? This is 1984, right?
Yeah.
Guess how many pianos fit in those 14 arches?
Tell me.
84. Okay, so we're going to have 84 pianists playing Rhapsody in Blue, and mm-hmm. they're going to be playing live to a track and so on. So, that's one of the projects that fell to me to put together. And I thought to myself, okay, we're about a month out.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of practicing. There's going to be a lot of people who are, of course, they're volunteers, right? And I'm going to pick 110 pianists because I know there's going to be a big attrition rate. 110, I'm going to rank them, right? Okay, so get my 110. And sure enough, as time elapses, getting closer and closer, more and more people are dropping out because they got to – it's L.A. This is a freeway driving costume rehearsal over here and then all the way across town for
that's
that. Right? So people dropping out. So we get to dress rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And at dress rehearsal, the cast members, including the pianist, they get to bring a family members or friends and so on. Okay, so dress rehearsal goes down just fine. So now we get to show day. And I'm down to one alternate. Alternate number 110, pianist number 110, right? Everybody else is going to get to play. Everybody else is going to be in it except this kid
mm-hmm.
who practiced so hard and not to mention lying about his age. He was supposed to be 18, found out he was 17, right? So he's standing there in the wings, right? I mean, the Coliseum's filled. You can't imagine the amount of press coverage and all this stuff, right? So media and cameras and production trailers and all that stuff. And this poor kid is crying because he's the only one who's not going to get to do it. And he had worked so hard. Well, sure enough, one of the other pianists – this is with maybe 5 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other pianists saw this and went up to him. And I just happened to be standing right there, or I wouldn't even have known that it happened, right, until afterwards. And the pianist, who was a very highly ranked in this group, highly ranked pianist,
yeah.
went up and said, you know what? My family were here during dress rehearsal. They saw it. I got the feeling of what it's like and all that sort of stuff. You take my piano. And the kid, you know, so the kid took the piano. And I think that I'm sure for both of those people and everybody else who knew about this, that every time the words Olympic ceremonies come up, that's what they think of. It was just a beautiful moment. It's like the kid's story of Hans Brinker and the silver skates. If some people may know it, skater breaks his lace going into the final competition. The other gives up his lace. So stuff like that happens. And sometimes stuff like that happens, except it's very, very funny instead of heartwarming. And the show has a lot of stories like that.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, we're here with Jeffrey Ernsthoff. He is performing tonight as part of the President's Distinguished Speaker Series at Western. The piece is titled Exactly 63 Minutes with an Unstable American Musician. And again, that's at Light Hall Theater tonight at 7 p.m. You can find out more information at wnmu.edu/culture. And we have another instrument here on the table, and it's I personally haven't seen something like this in the flesh, and I'm loving what I'm looking at. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about it?
Sure. What we're talking about here is a curved soprano saxophone. Now, the larger saxophones that you all know, the baritone and the tenor and the alto and so on, they are all curved. You know, they curve at the bottom and then there's a bell. The soprano is usually straight, kind of like a clarinet, and it's held. But you, instead of holding it down towards the floor, you kind of extend it out. Kenny G plays a straight soprano saxophone. The great John Coltrane, Sidney Bechet, and so on. I play a curved, which is shaped like an alto or a tenor, and so on. And the reason that it's a much cozier feeling for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that they've only really come into their own in the last 20 years, to the extent that major artists are performing with them or recording with them, is that because anytime you put curves in an instrument, it makes them a little harder to play in tune. And a saxophone, unlike a perfect cylinder like a flute, which mm-hmm. is a perfect cylinder, or a clarinet, right? A saxophone tapers. It's wider at the bottom. It flares out, whether it's straight or curved. So when you combine curving it, manufacturing with something that curves and flares, you got some difficult engineering challenges in terms of it being able to play in tune.
Yeah.
Well, for about 20 years ago, engineers figured out how to do it. So I like this one. Now, I'm going to play the mouthpiece for you just so you get an idea of how irritating I can be to my neighbors. Now we'll attach it to the horn. And hopefully it'll work. And some of the stuff in the show, generally introduced with some comedic or interesting anecdote, the music gets serious. So here's just a little excerpt, given that here we are in November. So here's a great jazz standard called Autumn Leaves. And I'll just play a little bit of it straight, if you will, and then kind of improvise around it. Because if I do the whole thing, we'll be here till, you know, Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And that would have a trio behind. And by the way, whenever I do these shows in other towns, I find a local trio. And here I've got three guys that are on work release from the nearest penitentiary. And these guys are all good. It's Byron and Ben and Kenji. That would be bass and keyboards and drums. And these guys are terrific. And we'll run through it tomorrow and then play tomorrow night.
Well, we love that you have folks from the community coming and playing with you this evening at Western. And again, if you're just tuning in here, we're here with Jeffrey Earnstoff. And that's going to be, he's going to be performing tonight at the President's Distinguished Speaker Series. The performance titled Exactly 63 Minutes with an Unstable American Musician. Again, that's at Light Hall Theater this evening at 7 p.m. We have just about 4 minutes left here. And I did notice when I was browsing through your website, I saw you have a book coming out titled The Land of Special Events, a Traveler's Advisory. And as obviously a heavy traveler, I'm sure he got a lot of advisories out there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the title of the book, actually, I just changed the title. It's all anecdotes as well, but the title of the book is The Stupor Bowl Halftime and Other Pleasantries, or How I Learned to Make a Spectacle of Myself. And I think the title is self-explanatory. And it's filled with all anecdotes along the lines of the ones that, mm-hmm. that we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Some of them are just so crazy. Shall I leave you with one more?
Do we have time? We have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's the 100th anniversary, 100th Army-Navy game. And we've got this giant flag that will be unfurled that covers the American flag that will cover the entire field. And the queue to these are midshipmen from the Naval Academy. They come out, they carry the thing through the tunnel, they get it out on the field, they unfurl it while Lee Greenwood is singing God Bless the USA. And the cue to collapse the flag and bring it back out, right off the field, is a pistol. Well, Army carries a howitzer whenever they play Navy.
Yeah.
So the guys from Army, the flag is just being unfurled. It's not quite all the way open. Army fires the howitzer.
Mm.
And the flag folds right back. And Lee Greenwood's looking around like, oh, what the heck is going on? Very funny. That's the kind of stuff that can happen in live events.
Wow. And you'll be hearing a lot more of these stories tonight. If you're going out tonight, you can definitely see Jeffrey Earnstoff. And his website is earnstoffcreative.com. That's earnstoff creative.com. And yes, again, our guest has been Jeffrey Earnstoff, performing as part of the President's Distinguished Speaker Series this evening. Exactly 63 minutes with a slightly, not slightly, just a fully unstable American citizen or American musician. That's going to be at WNMU's Light Hall this evening, 7 p.m. You can find out more at wnmu.edu/culture, including ticketing information. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being here today at KURU.
My pleasure. Everyone in New Mexico has always been so great to me. I love coming here.
We appreciate having you here. And a reminder, you are here at KURU 89.1 FM, your local community-supported radio. Do consider becoming a member or offering us a one-time donation if you enjoy programming like this here in our rural little community. That's gmcr.org. Thank you, Jeffrey.
My pleasure.